This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
I hope everyone had a nice Thanksgiving. Today's program is pre-recorded, so please do not call in. Our guest today is MLive.com reporter Mike Griffin. Mike has covered the SEC for many years. We brought Mike in to tell us how the SEC got so good. The last 15 to 20 years, they are the number one conference in the country. What happened? How did that happen?
Like anything else, Earl, you get what you pay for. And, you know, it's a passion down there. It's a lifestyle. The donation base is incredible. And the commitment to athletics is second to none. The money goes into the athletic programs. Facilities, huge. Recruiting budget, huge. Being willing to pay for coaches, huge. You add all those things up, and being in the Sun Belt, a warmer weather state, which I think gives the Southeastern Conference a big advantage. Athletes are able to train year-round. They like that. They like warm weather. And I guess that's kind of my Cliff Notes version. So it's been great joining you on the show today. And, we have more to do, don't we?
Yes, we do. I have a few more things to do. hey, Mike, what about the SEC? Because to me, they've also led a revolution, basically, in what assistant coaches get paid. I mean, their assistant coaches really, the price just, what assistant coaches get, just skyrocketed.
It is, and it's unbelievable. We saw a couple years ago at Tennessee where Lane Kiffin came in and made $2 million, and his father, Monty Kiffin, made over $1 million. And now it's nothing to see coaches making $700,000, $800,000, $900,000 as coordinators when, you know, it's funny, I looked up an article that I did about 10 years ago. They're making $150,000 or $175,000. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a competitive market. You know, as I said earlier, I think it's proven that, you know, you kind of get what you pay for. I mean, look at when Alabama hired Nick Saban, a lot of people thought Alabama was taking a big chance, but they were desperate.
Yeah.
They'd gone through a rash of coaches after Gene Stallings retired in 97. They'd gone through Mike Dubose and Mike Price and Dennis Franchione and Mike Shula, and none of those coaches had delivered the results that were up to the standards of Alabama. So they broke the bank, and they hired Nick Saban. And I'm not sure if it was $3 or $4 million when they. I want to say it was $4 million when they hired
him. I think
it
was. Yeah.
But that's what. And it kind of started with an agent in Memphis by the name of Jimmy Sexton. He made Nick a deal down there at LSU, and I think the deal was if Nick were to win the national championship, he would get paid $1 more than the highest paid coach in the country. And at the time, LSU thought that they'd struck quite a bargain. And then Nick Saban won a national title at LSU. And from there, the salaries began to skyrocket as other schools tried to match what LSU was paying Nick Saban. It became a recruiting tool. A coach would go to his athletic director and say, look, you got to pay me this much money, not because I need it, but my gosh, the recruits are talking about it. And if they're paying this much money for a guy like Nick Saban, you got to pay me that much money because that shows what you have invested in the program. And Sexton is an agent for many of these current coaches, even Urban Meyer, I believe he still represents. And he knows how to get these guys money. He puts huge buyout clauses in their contract. Tennessee, prior to firing Philip Fulmer, had just given them a $6 million buyout the summer before. And then they went and fired him less before the season was even over. And apologize for the Tennessee references, but that's the school I'd covered the previous 14 years before coming here. And, of course, you know, I also did Auburn and Alabama. So I've seen it at a few different schools down there. It's the same formula. I remember one time I was talking to Terry Bowden. Terry had left Auburn, and he was an analyst at the time. And I said to Terry, I said, how did Tennessee become such a successful school when they don't have very many prospects within their own state? You know, the numbers are down. They don't produce nearly as many Division I college football prospects. Well, certainly not as much as Florida, but even not as much as Georgia, South Carolina, Mississippi, or Alabama. So how was Tennessee winning? And how were they able to recruit nationally? And Terry told me that in the 1960s, he gave me a little history lesson, and I verified with the athletic director. Tennessee decided they were going to build the biggest and the best facilities in the country. And because they had the biggest and the best facilities, recruits were willing to come and take a look. You weren't going to get a player from California or even Michigan to travel all the way across the country for similar facilities. So you had to build something magnificent, something special. And certainly Neyland Stadium qualified as that. Michigan Stadium is also very large, but it's not nearly as detailed. The environment's not nearly as picturesque as Knoxville, Tennessee, where Neyland Stadium is located on the river. So by building the biggest and the best facilities, Tennessee was able to attract this national crowd of attention. Notre Dame attracted national attention, but that was largely because of their tradition. Tennessee did it with facilities. They were the first schools in the Old South, as they call that region, to have those type of facilities. Well, now we look around, Earl, and everybody has beautiful and wonderful facilities. And even since taking the job here at MLive, I've been very impressed with the Michigan State facilities. But I sat down with Mark D'Antonio last week, and I told him the same thing that I told your athletic director, and I'll share it on the air. I haven't written it yet, but I'll probably be writing it pretty soon. What's Michigan State going to do to be different than the rest of the Big Ten? How can Michigan State differentiate themselves from all the other schools and get those prospects to come up here for a visit rather than stopping in South Bend or stopping in Michigan? And I came up with the solution.
What is the solution?
The solution, Earl, is the Spartan Dome. Mm-hmm. They need a dome on Spartan Stadium. And as crazy as that sounds, I want you to think about it. If you put a dome on Spartan Stadium, not only do you play your football there, you play your big basketball games there too. You say, well, Mike, this is going to cost. You're talking $150 or $200 million project. Yeah. Well, I sure am. Mm, yes. But we're also talking more revenue because those empty seats that we saw against Northwestern, and yes, we taped the show, but I'm already telling you there's going to be empty seats on Saturday because they were there last Saturday too. Those seats are full in a climate-controlled environment. That 15,000 in attendance at a Michigan State basketball game could easily become 38,000 or 40,000 in attendance for a Michigan State basketball game. And you say, well, where is your proof that this could work? And I would point to the Syracuse Carrier Dome. And I'm going to tell you, that is an outdated and horrible facility. If that was up to date, Syracuse would still maintain the advantage that they had when that place was first built. And it certainly hasn't hurt their basketball program. And I don't think Donovan McNabb minded playing his football there either. Had Syracuse taken care of business and kept that facility up to date, they would still be able to recruit nationally. But they didn't. That building doesn't even have air conditioning, and it's called the Carrier Dome, which is just incredible to me. So you build the Spartan Dome. Now all of a sudden, there's a reason to go to Michigan State instead of Notre Dame or Michigan. Why? Because you don't have to freeze. Because you're playing in this wonderful state-of-the-art facility, and we get back to the money. Well, who's going to come up with the money? The Demers only have so much money. My goodness, they give enough of it as it is. Well, now all of a sudden you can host events there. Now instead of the hosting concerts of the people that were big 20 years ago, you get the people that are big now, and you're putting 40 and 45,000 in there, and you get a cut of that, and you're getting the monster truck shows, and you're getting the WWF. And you're making a ton of money on those type of events. Now, this would all require the Michigan State to work with the city government. Nobody could be too greedy. East Lansing couldn't put too many codes or inspectors in this like they like to do with everything else. Everybody would have to stand back and say, this is for the good of the school and the good of the community, and let the chips fall where they may. And for a while, it probably would be a little bit more expensive. But if Michigan State is serious about wanting to compete for national championships in football, this is the only way. Mark D'Antonio, and I told him this, he has topped out. You are not going to win back-to-back 11 win seasons, right, probably for a long time again, because he simply doesn't have the facilities. He's a good enough coach, Earl. He's not a salesman. He doesn't try and be anything more than a very good football coach and a good person. But I think he is a good football, but he's got to have the facilities. You've got to do something to make that kid in Florida, to make that kid in Georgia. And I'm not talking about the ones that the SEC schools have already passed on and you get them as a leftover and everybody thinks they're great. I'm talking about the premier athletes to come up here and wear green and white. Why would they want to do that? Right now, and I ask you, you've made a career here. Right now, what's the sell? Why would a kid choose Michigan State over Michigan or Notre Dame if he's from another state and knows nothing about the three schools?
Sure. Yeah, there's nothing to grab, make them want to come to Michigan State. And you forgot one other school. You have to throw Ohio State in there because that's the other – the state has to recruit against those three.
And Urban Meyer.
Yes, that's right. So, they're a rock in a hard place right now. Got to recruit against Michigan, Ohio State, and Notre Dame. Those are their three biggest competitors.
And you look at Notre Dame's back. Let me tell you, Brian Kelly – Tennessee interviewed Brian Kelly, and he had Earl, you probably might remember it better than me, but when Brian Kelly was at Central Michigan, some players got in trouble.
Yeah.
And he said some things that weren't deemed politically correct, something like that was street cred or they looked at crime different or something of that nature. I can't remember exactly what the particulars were. But it was a bump in the road in Brian Kelly's career. It was something people looked at and said, I don't know if he should have said that. I didn't think it was horrible or heinous, but it was enough for Tennessee back then, sitting very high on their horse, to say, well, we don't know. He said that one thing that one time. Boy, wouldn't they like another chance at Brian Kelly right now instead of Lane Kiffin. So you got Brian Kelly at Notre Dame, who I think is one of the top probably five or six coaches in the country. And then Michigan, I don't know if I think Brady Hoke's that good. But he certainly has had some good fortune in that stadium.
Yes, yes, yes.
And they are winning again. And winning breeds winning. It breeds recruiting. Yeah. And they're going to the big bowl games. Last year, I thought they played probably one of the only top 25 schools or top 30 schools that they could have beaten. They were very fortunate to draw a bad Virginia Tech team and get some, and again, win a close game. But at the end of the day, it's still a Sugar Bowl, right?
Yep, it is. And Mike, there's one thing about the schools in the South that almost drives me crazy. They are so passionate about the fans. But when you look at you mentioned Saban, I look at Auburn. Auburn gets no respect in their own state, in the state of Alabama, and they get all the leftovers that Saban picks. It's almost a perfect situation for him.
Well, there's a few jobs that are like that, and some people would probably say Michigan qualifies the same way. I think the Alabama and Auburn is very similar to Michigan and Michigan State. It is the big brother, little brother. No one wants to hear it. No one wants to like it. Every now and then Auburn rears up and is able to compete, but we all know how the story ends. We all know which way it'll fall eventually. It's the same situation that Michigan State faces. Auburn's an agricultural school, much like Michigan State. I see now Michigan State's added some majors where, you can do some professional things other than agriculture and engineering and communications and as far as the medical school and the law school. But for many, many years, and those are your major donors, your doctors and the lawyers, they give the most money and they keep those facilities up there. But yeah, it's a very similar situation, and now Nick is on the good end of it at Alabama. Of course, they built a statue for him, which this is what I tell people, and I've got some having grown up in Mason, I've got a lot of really good friends, the Joe Ganellis and the Cliff Walkingtons of the world. They'll say, we don't want to hear that. We believe that Michigan State can be number one, and I say to them, well, you know what? How come there's not a statue of Nick Saban outside of Spartan Stadium right now? How come he wasn't able to win a national champ? Because he doesn't have the facilities. He doesn't have the support. Now, Earl, part of what's missing from this equation is a little bit of perspective. Because as I walk around this Michigan State campus, I see some beautiful buildings. And I see I meet some great professors. And they cost money. Buildings and professors and educational departments cost money. In the South, I'm not saying that they don't have great schools. They do. The University of Florida, Georgia, certainly Vanderbilt, chief among them, are wonderful academic institutions that I think are on par with many Big Ten schools, if not most or all. But at other places, the money goes into the athletic facilities at the University of Tennessee. And I really don't like saying anything negative because I was fortunate to live there 14 years and raise my children there, and Knoxville was a wonderful community. But their college buildings are embarrassing. You have these gorgeous state-of-the-art athletic facilities, and then you look at the dorms that the students live in, or you look at the buildings where they take their classes, and it doesn't measure up to what Michigan State was in the 1960s. So do you really want to put all your eggs into that basket? I mean, it's a philosophy. It's almost like a sports car. Do you want to put all your money into the engine? How comfortable do you want the rest of the ride to be? And the SEC teams are basically souped-up cars. They got great engines. They're not the smoothest ride in the world. The interior is not plush. But if you want to go fast and be first, you go to an SEC school, and you're going to have a lot of fun on your Saturdays watching your teams go to bowl games and compete for championships. But it comes at a cost. And I don't know, you know, obviously as a sports writer, I enjoy impassioned fan bases, and I enjoy covering teams that win championships. But as the father of someone who may be going to college pretty soon at Michigan State, would I prefer that there's nice buildings, or would I prefer another $10 million sunk into the weight room to make it look that much better for the recruits? And these are questions that every school's got to ask itself. There's a bottom line. There are some economic advantages to having a great athletic program. It's been said many times before that athletics is the front porch to a university. It's what the common Joe sees on television. It's what your potential students of the future see. I talked to a guy just the other day when I was turning on my power at the home I'm renting. And he said, oh, you're from Knoxville. I went to school down there. I'm from up here, but I went to school down there. And I said, well, why did you go to school down there? He said, well, I watched him on TV. I saw the football team play. And so I went down there and looked at the campus, and I liked going to the games. And that's how they got a student from Michigan to attend the University of Tennessee. And there's a lot to that. Enrollment numbers vary based on the athletic success of a school. There's more to it, obviously. There's some academic things. And you and I discussed even before the show, there's an international flair to many universities that are getting students from overseas. But it's a lot to think about. It's a lot to consider. At the end of the day, you try and find those schools with the perfect balance of academics and athletics, and they're few and far between. You know, maybe we throw out a Texas, or we throw out a North Carolina, UCLA, although they struggled recently, seems to be back on their path to winning in athletic schools. Ohio State University is a good example of that. You'd have to say Michigan. But as far as football goes, you know, Michigan State's enjoyed a bit of a renaissance period with Mark D'Antonio. These have been, you know, great years, like I said, back-to-back 11-win seasons. But I fear that unless Michigan State takes the next step, that these were the good old days.
And that might well be, but, you know, because as you mentioned earlier, everything revolves around money. And does Michigan State want to make the commitment to, to a dome stadium or something? And that's the question. We don't know the answer to that right now. They may try to, but I would say they probably don't. I think they're taking athletics as far as they can take it, and with the budget that they have, and that's about it.
Well, it requires a little bit of a risk. I remember in this building, when I was a student at Michigan State some 20 years ago, we had to do a project where we had to make a pitch for some type of festivities that East Lansing was going to hold. And what would we do to draw people? And how would we draw people in? And I suggested at the time that they start bringing in big bands, not the local guys from Dansville, or Weberville, but big name bands. And the lady stopped me and said, "Do you realize how much money that would cost?" And I said, "Do you realize how much money that would make?" And I got a 4 point on that project. And I guess it was 4 or 5 years later that they started having some festivities with some bigger bands. Somebody else getting paid a lot more than a student came up with the idea and the know-how how to do it. But it takes money to make money, Earl. And if you want to win championships, you better think big. You better think dynamic. When I interviewed Urban Meyer, and I interviewed him, 5 or 6 times, he's always over the top. You say this guy's over the top. This guy. We were interviewing at before the national championship game against Oklahoma. I guess it was 4 or 5 years ago when I think it was Tebow against Bradford down there in the Pro Player Stadium in Fort Lauderdale, and it was a few days before the game, and a reporter said to Urban Meyer, you know, what would you say if these kids weren't able to win a national championship? He said, it would be a travesty. It would be a disaster. If this group of young men weren't rewarded with the number one ranking in a national championship, it would be something they would have to wake up to the rest of their life. I laughed. Uh-huh. And I thought, that is over the top, man. When I think of travesties and disasters, I think of earthquakes and tsunamis and hundreds of thousands of people dying. I don't think about losing a football game, Earl.
Yep.
But you know what? That's the mentality that it takes. Tennessee had a quarterback named Casey Clawson about 12 or 13 years ago, and Casey became only the second quarterback in history to win twice at the Swamp, both of his road trips. And I remember asking him about it before he won the second game. I said, how are you so effective here the first time? He said, Mike, it's a 100-yard piece of grass. It's not the Super Bowl. No, it's not. But he said, this is why he went to the University of Tennessee, to play in these type of games. Casey Clawson thought big. Many other players, you know, looked at the Swamp in Florida as this formidable, fierce, even the coaching staff would get tensed up by playing Steve Spurrier at the Swamp. But here's this kid from California. Could have gone anywhere in the country. He thinks big, Earl. He's thinking bigger than the Swamp. He's thinking Super Bowls and NFL career. The big thinkers are the ones that accomplish the big things. If the water's too hot, get out. And that's what I'd say to Michigan State right now. You know, I've listened to my friends to all back-to-back 11-win seasons, a very big win over an SEC school in Georgia, which, you know, certainly that's something to be proud of if you're an alum. You got to think big. Urban Meyer now at Ohio State and Brady Hoke with whatever is going on in Michigan and however he's winning games, and now you got Brian Kelly at Notre Dame. The water's heating up, Earl. You know, Mark D'Antonio can only win with 2- and 3-star guys for so long. This year, I would argue, a lot of people are up in arms. The Spartans, of course, 5-5 going into Saturday's game against Northwestern, saying, oh, my gosh, this is, you know, oh, what a terrible year. Well, guess what? You're 3-4 in games decided by 10 points or less. The previous two seasons, when you won 11 games, you were 9-1. Sooner or later, the odds catch up to you.
That's right. Out. It does.
And this is what Michigan State, this is more close to what Michigan State really is than those 11-win seasons.
Mm-hmm. Mike, how does, because we haven't touched on it yet, I mean, we've talked around it, but how does recruiting impact the South?
It's everything.
There?
Recruiting, you know? Earl, it's everything. I mean, recruiting, I mean, it's like this. It's like if you were to go to Wall Street and tell an investor that he couldn't buy any of the blue chip stocks, but you still expected him to make money, you'd say that's ridiculous. Do you know how the odds are stacked against him if he's not allowed to buy the blue stock, you know, the blue chip stocks? You're asking Mark D'Antonio to win with lesser talent? That's not realistic. I don't care how good of a coach he is. Nick Saban proved that. Nick wasn't able to do what Mark was able to do here in 5 straight bowl games. So, and you know what? And Nick saw that. And Nick left town. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't going to win big here. And when he left LSU, he went for the NFL, and before long he figured out he wouldn't win. He took the Alabama job. Look at Phil Jackson. You know, Phil Jackson won a lot of NBA championships. But how many championships do we really believe Phil Jackson would have won without Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, and Shaquille O'Neal? You know, that's the name of the game. I think what Mark D'Antonio's done here is give Michigan State a chance to taste what it feels like to be near the top, a chance to take the next step, to have a solid foundation. And now it's up to the program to decide, do they really want to take it? And quite frankly, the answer that I've seen so far is no. I see a tough season with some close losses. I've seen empty seats. I've seen fan apathy. And I hear people say, well, they're the same old Spartans. And I'd say, well, you know what? You're the same old Spartan fans. You're turning the channel. I remember just a couple of weeks ago, I went into my office, and everybody was talking about the Detroit Tigers. Now, yep. Don't get me wrong. I grew up listening to Ernie and 760 AM. That was what I went to bed to every night. I was never a Tigers fan, but I loved listening to the games on radio. And I didn't play for the Detroit Tigers. I don't think you did either, Earl.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think any of these people really have anything invested in the Detroit Tigers.
Mm-hmm. True.
But many of these people walked on this campus and have degrees that say Michigan State. So why is it that everybody is so excited about the Tigers and all wanting to spend their money on Tiger merchandise? And when we're talking about a professional sports team that has absolutely nothing in common with their fans, that quite frankly was, to me, fat and sloppy and probably could have achieved much, much more had their one of their star players known how to slide. Nobody ever talked. You know what play I'm talking about, don't you?
You have to refresh my memory there.
Well, there was a play at the plate, and the Giants made the perfect, executed a perfect cutoff and a perfect throw. And all the talk was whether or not the third base coach should have sent the runner.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one, yeah.
It was Prince Fielder.
Yeah.
Nobody bothered to look and say, well, how come Prince Fielder doesn't know how to do a hook slide or a reach slide? If he executes, but instead it's all on the, but my point, the point is Michigan State fans turned off their football team and they changed the channel. They changed it to the Lions. They changed it to the Tigers. They changed it to the Detroit Pistons. Some of them even changed it to the Michigan Wolverines or Notre Dame. They're not all in. In the South, the communities, the fan bases are all in. It's and part of it is just strictly the demographics. There wasn't a lot of sports teams in the South for many years. We're starting to see a few more in different places.
Yes, and we know that, you know, there's a lot of people that are leaving the state of Michigan, moving down to the Sun Belt.
Yeah.
So that shift in demographics there has really played a big part in recruiting.
Jobs, you know, we can get into a whole other discussion about the evils of unions and how businesses now are going places where there aren't. You're saying, okay, you want to force us to use union labor? Well, we're just going to pick up our shop and move somewhere where we don't have to pay, you know, $30 an hour to the factory worker. Or these extravagant benefits that most people in the regular working world don't get. It's an industrial phenomenon that's taking place, and frankly, the Midwest is kind of getting left behind or getting left in their tracks. Michigan needs to change its ways. It needs to become more business friendly. I mean, again, it's a whole nother show, but. Yeah. But you know what? That's a part of it. The population shift is absolutely a part of it. And the opportunities in the South, Earl, that was one of the reasons I went to the South. You know, I worked at the Lansing State Journal as a part-timer from 1988 through 91. And, of course, I was able to learn a lot working with you. You and I would go to the Silver Dome, and I learned a lot of my radio background from you that I used doing a radio show these past 15 years before I moved back, and learned a lot about journalism from Jack Ebling, who was the Spartan beat writer at the time. And Steve Klein was the sports editor. He's now a professor of the communications department at George Mason. I was lucky to be surrounded by an all-star cast of media members, and you all were kind enough to put me under your wing and train me. But there wasn't any opportunities for me here. So I had to go elsewhere. I ended up going to Idaho for 2 years, and then I went to the South, and my goodness, not only do the fans go all in, but the media goes all in. I mean, the trips that I went on and the hotels that I stayed at and the money that I was able to make, the sports writers in the Midwest didn't have it that good. There weren't that many job opportunities. The company's expense accounts weren't as big. They weren't willing to travel to as many places because college sports wasn't as big a deal in the Midwest as it was the South. So that's the mentality. And it goes all across the board. It leaks into the facilities. It leaks into the passion of the fan bases, the attendance. And yes, as you brought up, the recruiting. Because the recruiting is, you know, Philip Fulmer, that was his money ticket. It was his recruiting.
Yeah. Is there more pressure to recruit in the South? I remember, I know they changed it, but they the teams in the South, in the Sun Belt, they over-recruited for a while. Right. And I know Big Ten Commissioner Jim Delaney talked about that, the gray shirts. How big is that down there? I mean, we never had it up here in Michigan, but that apparently that's a pretty...
It was. It's been scaled back now. It's been scaled back right now where they're not doing that anymore. The SEC Commissioner, Mike Slive, took action against it, protecting the student athlete from, you know, you sign a scholarship, you think you're committed, and then the coach signs. Now, part of the reason that they started going to oversigning, though, was academic compliance. Let's say you got 24 scholarships and you sign 24 guys and three guys don't qualify. You're three guys short. So you say, well, you know what? Let's sign 28 because there's a chance that three or four of these guys may not qualify academically. So that's how it started. But then Nick Saban took it to another level. He said, well, let's sign 32. And I'll just tell some of these guys, you know what? You're in next year's class. And that's that. That's the gray shirt. That's how they're going to use it because there's going to be some attrition throughout the year.
Yeah.
And it, you know, and it worked for the coaches, but it didn't necessarily work for the student athletes. Now, you could argue, well, it's up to the student athlete. Maybe the student athlete would rather sit out a year and pay his own way to Alabama for a year for the opportunity to get a scholarship the next year. Shouldn't that be his decision? You know, and that was the argument that the coaches used. But I think some people felt like that rule was being abused. And it's not just about the numbers. It's about the caliber of athlete. And what does an athlete want when he goes to school? That's something else you've got to ask yourself. Most of these guys, I went to Michigan State because I wanted to be a journalist and because I knew they had a good communications department and I knew that they'd turned down a lot of good journalists before me. Well, kids that want to play football are thinking the same thing. They want to play in the NFL. So they're going to go to the schools that regularly produce the most NFL athletes. And once you have that lineage going, as Nick Saban does, you know, you're playing for a guy that's coached in the NFL. He knows how to prepare you. He knows what the expectations will be. It's very attractive. And that's where we get back to investing in your coaches. You get guys with NFL experience, that's going to appeal to recruits. So we're talking facilities. We're talking impassioned fan bases. We're talking opportunities to win championships. And now we're talking about advancing your skills to the NFL level. So again, why does the kid leave Georgia to come to Michigan State? What can you possibly offer that Georgia or the University of Alabama or even the University of Tennessee can offer in a bigger, better way than Michigan State?
That's because what happens, as you know, the kids, most kids want to stay close to home. You know, most kids don't go over 250 miles from home or less. So most kids want to stay at home. And when you talk about, why would they stay here or either come up here? It's a challenge for Michigan State to get kids to come here and stay here from out of state. It's always been a problem. Recruiting the out-state students.
Well, and you're right. You should have an advantage from the kids from Michigan. But then you ask yourself this. How much better prepared are the football players in the South at the high school level than in the state of Michigan?
Yeah.
You know, spring football, they've had that in the South for a long time. All of our sports now, all of our high school sports are becoming more specialized. I remember when I went to Mason, you know, I played football, I wrestled, I played baseball. And, you know, whatever season it was, that's what sport you played. Well, that's not how it works anymore. Now there's specialization. There's year-round. When I coached my daughters in softball, I was telling you before the show, I coached both my daughters in softball. That was a year-round program. We played spring ball. We played summer ball. We played fall ball. And then in the winter, we went to the indoor facility and we hit and we pitched for three months. In Michigan, because of the climate, you're at a disadvantage. You're not able to train outside as much. The other thing is because football is so much bigger than anything else, you're almost guaranteed that the best athletes are going to take a shot at football before they play anything else.
Yeah.
You know, soccer, make me laugh out loud. You know, that's for the guys that aren't good enough to play football for the most part. Basketball, seen a lot of these guys, John Henderson, an Outland Trophy winner, 6'7", 295. He was playing basketball. But at the end of the day, you knew where Big John was going to end up. Yeah. Just think what kind of basketball player he could have been with a 4'6", 40 and a 36-inch vertical at 6'7", 290. But football is king, and your best athletes are going to play football. and they're going to train year round, and they're going to be in a in their football stadiums for high school in the and the coaches, high school football coaches in the South. It's nothing for them to make over $100,000. So I knew one in Oxford, Alabama. They bought his house for him. I mean, they want to win. That is, again, it's a commitment to that sport down there that's different. Where in the Midwest, I think, you know, basketball, to me, just as big here as football is in high school, certainly.
It is.
And we also, of course, we had wrestling, which actually helps football. You know, a lot more of the non-revenue sports, I think. Soccer, I'm sure there's athletes here that are, they probably could play football, but they choose to play soccer. And, you know, to each their own. I certainly don't want to throw those people under the bus, but you're asking me why college football is better in the South? And I would ask you for a reason why it wouldn't be.
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, and I wanted to touch on this as well, you know, the coaching style of these coaches. What about an Urban Meyer? How is the coaching style so different in the South to the guys in the Midwest? I mean, what makes it different that kids will go to the Southern schools, or maybe even now go to Ohio State? What is different in the coaching styles down there? I know there seems to be a big difference in how the coaches recruit the kids.
Mm-hmm. Well, any good coach will tell you that you play the scheme that best fits your talent.
Mm-hmm.
And this comes, and people have heard this many times before, speed. Urban Meyer's offense, I remember talking to the Tennessee defensive coordinator about this. I said, what are you going to do to stop Urban Meyer's spread? He said, Mike. He said, come on, man. You're not that dumb, are you? I said, no, I want to know. He said, Urban Meyer, it's not rocket science. He's not doing anything special that hasn't been. It's a takeoff of the single wing. He said, the whole thing that makes that thing work is Percy Harvin. You got to have guys on your perimeter that have unbelievable speed. And if you say, well, geez, you know, I would refer you to Mr. Martinez and how he ran through the Michigan State defense. Let me tell you, that is a really well-coached defense, Earl. The Spartans don't miss many tackles. Those guys know how to play football. But you saw what one speed guy could do to them. Yeah, I love Bulla. I love Bulla. This is a name at Michigan State. You want to build a statue of somebody? Just make it a just build it. And just put Bulla on it for all of them. Okay, put whatever numbers all over the jerseys. All the whole Bulla family, because that family has been worth their weight in gold to this place in football. But Bulla was reduced to nothing in the open field against Martinez. We saw it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. When Martinez took off, we're talking, there's acreage all around.
Yep.
It's one-on-one. And Bulla didn't get a finger on this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Speed.
Yep.
And that's what they do. They isolate their speed guys. The Big Ten does what they do well. I enjoy it. I enjoy smash mouth football. A lot of people don't like smash mouth football. They want to see the scoreboard lighten up all day. I don't mind seeing the scoreboard lighten up, but I like watching guys like Le'Veon Bell pounding in line. I like that guy. He's a soldier, man. When Le'Veon takes the ball, I know he's going to fall forward, and he's going to put his head down, and he's going to carry this team as hard and as long as he possibly can. You're going to get every ounce out of Le'Veon Bell every game, and I respect that. I'm a running backs guy, and I like the way Michigan State just pounds teams. I love the way they pound it. I wish their quarterback – Maxwell would run a little bit more. I think the bootlegs are there for him. I wish their receivers could separate. They don't have any speed on the outside. That's why their longest play of the year is 48 yards. If they had a speed guy, if they had a receiver that could scare those safeties and line up a couple yards deeper, it would open up the whole game. Le'Veon Bell would get two more yards per carry, and every now and then Michigan State could go for the jugular and hit you with a deep pass. But unfortunately, they don't have any receivers that could run by me or you. That's part of the problem. In the South, everybody's got a speed guy.
Yeah,
there is a premium on them, and they're not coming here. Even if they're from here, they're going South. Pierce Price was from Ohio. He's one of the keys to he's from Dayton, Ohio, to Tennessee's national championship season. Why was he at Tennessee instead of Ohio State? You know, a guy like that makes a difference. And all the Southern teams have them. They've got those speed guys. The other premium is on defensive linemen.
Yes,
it is. The SEC gets those as well.
That's where they seem to have a big advantage in the interior, mm-hmm. in defensive line and offensive line. They just seem to get more guys with speed and size.
Well, you look at the NFL numbers every year. And you'll see that more guys get drafted out of the SEC than any other conference in the country. These guys want to play pro football. And Earl, it's almost gotten to the point where the SEC is like it's on its own other level for college football. Missouri found that out. Missouri came in talking a lot of smack. They were talking about old man football and they could win at that level. And all Missouri's done for most of this year is get embarrassed. They even lost to Vanderbilt at home, for goodness sakes. So it's almost like it's on another level. And I don't see that trend slowing down anytime soon. Now, I do think Urban Meyer will make an impact. I do think Urban Meyer will dominate the Big Ten because he's a guy that I don't want to say quite win at all costs. I think even Urban Meyer has a conscience somewhere along the line. But I'll give you an example. Prior to the Michigan State game, it's customary for these teams to send one another films. Urban Meyer edited out the shifts in the formations. All he gave Michigan State was the snaps. They weren't able to see how his team originally lined up and what they shifted out of. Urban Meyer said, well, what do you mean? I gave you the game film. It doesn't say anything about giving you all the pre-snap read stuff. It was ruthless. It was cutthroat. Well, that's not being very gentlemanly. Well, Urban Meyer's not here to be a gentleman. He's here to win a championship. So Michigan State brought it to the Big Ten's attention. What did Urban Meyer do? He threw out accusation that a player was playing dirty, a red herring, and it served its purpose. Everybody suddenly stopped talking nationally, national perception we're talking now, stopped talking about Urban's edited game tapes and started talking about the accusation of the player. 2 days later, that accusation proved to be false. But Urban Meyer had accomplished what he'd wanted. He'd taken the heat off himself, he'd put it on Michigan State, and he'd moved on. This is a guy you don't want to step in. You step in Urban Meyer, you're going to stink. Because I'm going to tell you, this guy, don't step on him. You know, you want to play football with him, that's fine. But you start stepping on him, he's going to make you stink. He knows how to play the game. He's got the national media behind him. He worked for ESPN. He's one of their friends. You know, it's kind of funny, you know, not to get too far off on a tangent here, but to hear Dick Vitale shill for John Calipari is one of the most amazing things that this is happening every day. Now, Calipari gives Dick Vitale's charity fund a lot of money. Maybe that justifies it. Maybe if you give enough money for cancer research, you can do whatever you want. I don't know what maybe there's some unwritten code out there that if you give some of the money away, it doesn't matter how you're getting that money. But it's unbelievable. And if ESPN likes you, you're in good shape. If they don't, ask Bruce Pearl. They talked all year long about Bruce Pearl having a kid over to his house for a barbecue while they were champion Jim Calhoun, whose program had paid like thousands of dollars for a recruit to take a flight. How come we weren't getting a UConn timeline investigation? Why was it Tennessee? Because ESPN plays favorites. Again, and guess what? Guess what conference, Earl, has a contract with ESPN right now?
Mm-hmm. Yes, the SEC.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Perception. Another reason why the SEC continues to be successful.
You just brought up a good point. How does television and television broadcast impact on the games and on recruiting? I mean, it seems like their hand is in everything, even though they're not in everything. They say they just follow the games and follow what they do. But we know that television has a huge impact on whatever goes on.
Tennessee became a juggernaut and won a national championship because Peyton Manning signed at the University of Tennessee. Casey Clawson, that quarterback I told you about that won twice in Florida at the Swamp, came to Tennessee because he watched Peyton Manning playing at Tennessee on television. That's why I don't understand the short-sightedness of the Big Ten Network's thinking. That Michigan State game, Earl, was a great football game. I don't care what state in the union you were in. If you turned that football game on, you were going to be riveted to the final play. Except that you couldn't turn it on all over the country because it was a Big Ten Network game. And you can't get it everywhere like you can ESPN or ESPN2. Short term, small thinking, the Big Ten makes money. Big picture, they lose a lot of national exposure. I don't get it. I do think it's good from the standpoint that some non-revenue sports that wouldn't normally get exposure are getting exposure now, and I think that's healthy. I think that's good for those student athletes. But what's better for those student athletes is more money rolling in and better facilities and better coaches. And football drives the revenue train.
Well, Mike, let's shift to another part because, as you mentioned, football drives the revenue train, no doubt about that. But what about for women's sports? In the South, it seems like women's basketball, especially, is big in the South. It's not that big up here. But it seems like in the South, they play a lot more attention to women's sports.
I'd say yes and no. I'd say the schools do. Certainly Pat Summitt had a lot to do with that before her retirement last year. That was part of the tradition at Tennessee, was women's basketball. She was able to draw 14,000 to 15,000. I see Michigan State has a very successful women's basketball program as well. When the SEC decides that they're going to get serious about something, and by the way, SEC women's basketball has recently dropped off the last couple of years. And now the movement's been towards softball. They got these beautiful $6 to $10 million stadiums they're able to recruit to. And once again, being a Sun Belt state and having that warmer weather to condition and train year-round makes a big difference. I think it's just a matter of whatever the SEC invests in, they're going to be good at. Again, it goes into how much money you're going to put into it. Alabama has a great gymnastics program because they've got a great gymnastics training facility. And their women's basketball program isn't that good. So people go to women's gymnastics instead. It's a matter of priorities. I'll give you an example. I was sitting a couple of years ago at an NCAA softball regional next to a guy named Graham Hayes who does a lot of the non-revenue sports writing for ESPN.com. And him and another fellow were having a conversation, and they had no idea where I was from. And the guy said, "What's the worst Division I softball program in the country?" And Graham Hayes said, "Hands down, Michigan State." Let me tell you, Earl, it's embarrassing. It's pathetic. And I'll tell you why. A few years ago, I was coaching softball, and I coached at the AAU at a gold level, and I had probably three or four girls that had Division I talent. And I knew as an alum of Michigan State that I couldn't tell any of those girls, "Hey, you ought to look at the Michigan State program. You might have an opportunity." That would have been a violation. But I knew that by rule, I was able to write a letter to the Michigan State coach and say, "You know, there's players that you may want to consider. I think you can do that. Pretty sure you can." So I did. I wrote an email. I got a form letter back. Form letter. "Here's when our camp is." I said, "You got to be kidding me. Are you serious? As bad as your program is, as much help as you need, this is how you respond to someone letting you know that there's a prospect in another state." And you know what? Nobody seems to care. You got a softball program over there that's horrible. It's beyond horrible. It's embarrassing. You got great facilities. And this is different. This is different than men's sports.
It is.
Because these girls aren't coming to play pro softball. They're coming somewhere to get a good education and a good college experience. And certainly, I could vouch that Michigan State can do that.
And they'll do that. But the other thing is, as far as the general population out there that supports games, Michigan State fans, historically and still a lot, they don't support sports other than football and basketball. The rest of the sports don't get that much support.
If you win, they'll come.
Yeah, that's often been said.
That's a fact. I've seen it happen. I saw it happen in Alabama when their women's basketball program was good in the late 90s, and I was covering some of those games. They would have crowds of 10,000, 11,000. Now they don't get 1,500 because they're among the worst. Gymnastics will put 14,000 people in Coleman Coliseum. Yet if you go to a gymnastics meet at a lesser school, they may be lucky to get 1,500. Volleyball is the same way. If you win, people show up. If you don't, they don't show up. Simple as that. But getting back to my point, it's a commitment from the school to be competitive. Now, I'm not saying that Michigan State should turn into Florida and fire coaches if they don't win conference titles. And I'm not saying that they should turn into Texas and be willing to give $150,000 bonuses to non-revenue coaches who play for NCAA titles. But when you continually lose and you've got a program that's a constant embarrassment, and you allow it to go on? Why? What if you had a professor And none of the kids that were graduating from his classes were getting jobs, and they weren't prepared for the job market. Would they stay on staff at Michigan State? No, they wouldn't. But you know what? Somebody's got to care first. And that's why I question the overall commitment to athletics at Michigan State. Now, I've talked with you and Jack before I took this job, in fact, and you both agreed that this is a different Michigan State than the one that I knew 20 years ago, certainly a different one than the one I grew up with 30 years ago when I was in Mason, and nobody cared about Michigan State. Why should anybody have cared about Michigan State in the 70s and early 80s? Michigan State didn't care about Michigan State. It was a drag. There was no excitement around the program. But you and Jack both said, oh, no, this is different. They got an athletic director now who really cares. You got a president. Everybody's on board here. Everybody wants to win. I said, okay, well, we'll see. Well, in football, I would agree. I said, as I said, talking to Mark D'Antonio, there's no doubt in my mind that you got yourself a great coach. I've talked with Mark Hollis. There's no doubt in my mind that you've got yourself an innovative athletic director that's willing to do things different and take a chance to put Michigan State out there in the national spotlight. But where's the commitment to the other athletic programs? Why can't you be good at them? Why do you have to tolerate less than mediocrity? I'm not saying win a championship. I'm just saying don't be an embarrassment.
Well, as you know, we've mentioned this a whole lot during this hour. You have to spend a lot of money. I mean, for Michigan State, they have to make a big commitment to all the sports.
Well, you said the softball facility is nice.
And volleyball, they got a nice volleyball facility. Soccer's got a great facility. The facility has really improved here in the last few years.
They have, and it's noticeable. But she coaches a part of the equation. You know, listen, nobody wants to walk around firing people. Everybody wants it to be warm and fuzzy. Even Mark D'Antonio is going to have some questions to answer after the season. You know, is this a staff? It's a staff that can win 11 games back-to-back years by winning 9 out of 10 games decided by 10 points or less. But does Mark really have a staff that can win a national championship? Does he have a quarterback's coach and an offensive coordinator that can convince one of the top 12 or 15 quarterbacks in the nation to come and play for them because of the work they've done with Cousins or Maxwell? You know, I don't know. I don't know that. But if we're talking about this program truly wanting to compete for national championships, that's what it takes. It takes a commitment all the way around. It's not just facilities. It's not just great coaches. It's not just the fan base. It's everything. It's a universal commitment. And as we began our conversation today, the SEC makes a universal commitment, certainly to football and largely to athletics. Now, it comes at a cost.
Yes.
And that's where we get back to other things, such as what you're able to pay your professors, what your building looks like, how well your campus maintenance goes, things like that. Is it worth sacrificing some of that? It's a gamble, because if you spend all that money and you don't win big, then you're going to be, playing Robin Hood and stealing from one department to give to another. If you do win big, it pays big dividends, because then athletics has more money to direct back to the university.
Mike, we're about ready to close our program out, but I got to ask you, how does it feel to come back to Michigan, come back home in essence? We talked a lot over the years, as you know, and I always thought you wanted to come back home, but now that you're here, how does it feel like coming back and working in Michigan?
Wow. I'm still kind of getting my feet wet. Certainly it's good to see you on a daily basis and Jack. And there's a lot of really good beat writers that cover Michigan State, a lot of good guys I enjoy working with. MLive is really the reason I came back, more so than anything else.
I want to thank our guest, Mike Griffin from MLive.com, for joining me this afternoon to discuss the SEC and sports here at Michigan State and in the Big Ten. You've been listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870, WKAR East Lansing. We'll be back on Monday with a live program from WKAR East Lansing.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.